This is Allison.
And this is Beverly.
Welcome back to Shaky Understanding. Today we are talking about a certain play.
So there's a bunch of superstition around this play in particular. And there's a tradition in theater circles to not say the name of this play or the name of the main character of this play inside a theater, unless you are performing the play. Even during rehearsals, they'll say, like, Mr. McBee or Lady McBee. So, if you're in a theater, please leave so that death and destruction will not rain upon your head.
Angels and ministers of grace defend us.
Angels and ministers of grace defend us. The name of the play is Macbeth. Whew, I got you.
We said it. And now it's out there. Now we can, I feel like now we can say it the rest of the podcast because we said it once.
Absolutely. Though, if you do say it inside a theater or you are listening to this inside a theater, the only way to get uncursed is to go outside, spin in a circle, counterclockwise, I think, curse and spit, and then you have to knock and someone has to let you back in.
That's slightly simpler than the version I know, which is that you have to run around the whole theater, the outside of the building, and then curse and then spit and then go back inside.
I mean, you might as well do both. It's basically a cootie shot.
Yeah. So with that, why don't you give us a little summary?
So here's some Shakespeare abridged. So we start this play on the battlefield. Duncan, who's the king of Scotland, has won a huge victory, and he finds out that the Thane of Cawdor has been killed. And, I paused before I said it. Macbeth has been crucial in defeating these forces, and so Duncan has decided to give him the Thaneship. Now, Macbeth doesn't know this, and we cut to another spot on the battlefield. Macbeth and Banquo run into the Weird Sisters, which are these three witches who are cooking up some soup. And they tell Macbeth that he will be the Thane of Cawdor and the King of Scotland. And they tell Banquo that his sons will be the King of Scotland. And then they disappear into the mist. And Banquo and Macbeth are like, I don't know, man. I don't know if that's true. And then right then, this messenger comes in and tells Macbeth, hey, by the way, the king says you're the Thane of Cawdor. Congratulations. Thank you for fighting. And Macbeth is like, oh my God, that came true. What if the rest of this comes true? And Banquo's like, whoa, that's crazy. We're both going to be king. And Macbeth is like, yeah. And then
so much subtext in that one word.
But for real. So Macbeth meets back up with Duncan and is like, thank you so much. And Duncan's like, let's have dinner at your house. So he sends a letter ahead to his wife telling her of the witch's prophecy and that he and the king are coming. And actually, I think he only tells her that the witches prophesized because then a messenger comes in and is like, hey, the king's coming for dinner. And she's like, why didn't he tell me that? Typical husband stuff.
Yeah, typical dude. Guess what, honey? La 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 la. Oh, the boys, friend is coming.
Yeah, the boys are coming over for a beer.
P.S.
Anyway.
So Lady M is so excited. It was like, oh my God, I'm going to be queen. He's going to be king. We need to make this happen right away. And she basically invokes all these dark spirits and says, unsex me here, make me a man so I can do the dark deeds I need to do to become queen. And then Macbeth comes in. He's like, hey, did you get my letter? And she's like, yeah, we're going to kill the king. He's like, what? I'm not sure that's a good idea. And she's like, no, trust me. And he's like, okay. So they have their dinner. And Macbeth is still really torn. He doesn't know whether he wants to kill the king or if he should just wait for these things to happen. And Lady M basically says, are you a man? Like, you promised me you'd do this. Now you're not going to do it. And he says, you're right. I'm going to do it. There's all these images of supernatural signs. He sees a dagger floating before him. And then he kills the king. And you don't really know if it's Macbeth going crazy or if he's seeing signs or if he's just so racked by guilt that this is what his brain's doing to him. And so he murders the king with the knives of the drunk guards of the king. And so they're going to blame the guards for the king's murder. And the next day, Macduff comes and is like, hey, the king told me to wake him up, to take him to my house. And he goes inside and the king is dead. And everyone's like beside themselves. They can't believe that the king would be murdered here of all places, like in a house, like after the war. Macbeth comes out and is like feigning shock with Lady Macbeth. And they're both like, oh my God, look, these knives from the guards, they were covered in the king's blood. And I murdered those guards because I was so enraged that they could kill the king. And a couple people are like, that's sort of weird that he would just straight murder the guards instead of questioning them in front of everyone else. Now, Duncan, the king who was just murdered, has two sons, Malcolm and Donna Bain. And they look to each other and are like, hey, someone just murdered our dad. They're probably going to try and murder us. So they run away. And some people are like, oh, they must have been the murderers. Like, they must have been the ones who hatched the plot against their dad so that they could have the power. So they make Macbeth the king of Scotland. So then Macbeth is like, this is great, I'm king. But now I'm super paranoid because those witches said I would be king. But they said Banquo's sons would be kings too. Banquo's still alive. His sons are still alive. I'm going to have them murdered. I'm going to be king forever. And so he has murderers go and murder Banquo and Banquo's son Fleance. But Fleance escapes. Banquo is murdered, sadly, and Fleance gets away. The murderers come back and tell Macbeth this, and he's like, oh, this is great. Banquo was murdered. And then they're like, hey, but his son got away. I hope that's cool. And he's just distraught as all hell, and he can't even fathom. And he's told this at a feast with all these nobles of Scotland. They're all about to toast to the new king and everything, and he suddenly sees Banquo's ghost and starts acting nuts in front of everyone. And Lady M is like, why are you looking over there? You can't be crazy in front of people. That's not cool, honey. And he's like, I'm just gonna go to bed. And that's what he does. So then we see Macduff, the person who discovered that Duncan was dead, who's been kind of rabble-rousing. He's been pretty against Macbeth being king. And he ends up going to London to talk to Malcolm, who is Duncan's rightful heir to the Kingdom of Scotland. And they are talking about going to war. And during this, Macbeth hears about this and decides, you know what? I'm going to murder Macduff and his wife and his kids. So he sends murderers to his house, but Macduff isn't there, but they murder his wife and kids. And Macduff hears about this and is like, all right, we're going to war. We're going to kill Macbeth. And so Malcolm and Macduff lead an army against Macbeth. Macbeth tells his wife, he tells Lady M, I'm going to go to the witches, I'm going to find out some more stuff, and we're going to figure out if I can defeat these people or not. And the witches show him all these things. They have the god of, like, discord, Hecate, with them. They have a whole scene with Hecate. They tell Macbeth that he won't be killed until the forest of Birnamwood marches on Dunsinane, which is the castle where he's holed up in as the King of Scotland. And he says, oh, well, that's great. The forest can't move. This will be great. And then they also tell him that he cannot be killed by anyone who is born from a woman. And he says, oh, great. But that's the only way humans are born. So I'm totally chill. And then he goes back to his castle feeling very confident. And then a messenger comes in and is like, hey, the forest is kind of moving. He's like, what? And it turns out that Malcolm and Macduff's forces have cut down trees and held them in front of them to disguise their numbers so they can't tell how many soldiers they have. So all of the prophecies are coming true. Macbeth's like sweating a little bit, but he's like, it's okay, everyone's still born from a woman, right? And they're like, yeah. And Lady M is having all these troubles sleeping, and there's a scene where she's seen washing her hands over and over again and saying, out damn spot, which is something you may have heard. And it turns out that, like, her guilt is having effect on her, and she's sleepwalking and having all these terrible things. And then it's revealed she kills herself and dies. And then Macbeth is like, really wish you wouldn't have done that, pretty much. They have the forces coming towards them. The war happens, basically, at Dunsinane. And Macbeth is having great victories on the field, and all these people are trying to kill him, but they can't. And he finally runs into Macduff. And Macduff is like, oh, I've been waiting for this. You killed my wife and son. Prepare to die. And he says, oh, well, you shouldn't fight me because I can't be killed by anyone born from a woman. And Macduff says, guess what? I was from my mother's womb, untimely ripped, which basically means he was C-section baby, which basically means that he can kill Macbeth. And they fight, and there's a big battle, and Macduff kills Macbeth. Malcolm is crowned King of Scotland, and everyone is like, hail King of Scotland at the end. And that's the end. And we think Fleance will lead them eventually, but we don't really know.
Cool. So
we have some special guests here today. So we have Elise Dubois and Alexia Dox here.
Hi.
Hey, guys.
Yes. So we are awesome. The co-creators, co-writers, co-producers of The Real Housewives of Shakespeare.
Yeah. Which is hilarious, guys. Yay. It's on the YouTubes, on the internets, and you should be checking it out.
Yeah, the whole first season is up, so you can literally binge watch all 7 episodes.
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So they are all, they're also some Shakespeare experts, which is great, because this is a pretty complicated play. And I've got some questions.
I'm excited.
And I got some things to discuss. This is something I brought up earlier. Mm-hmm. I feel like, is this play just about justifying England invading Scotland? And Shakespeare was like, don't worry, guys. They wanted us to take them over. See?
They spend too much time listening to ghosts and stuff.
And witches.
We should bring some political savviness.
I mean, has that ever occurred to anyone else?
I think Shakespeare is definitely... He's been hired by the monarchy to make them look better, for sure. There's a couple of plays that he does that for. I think Richard II in particular.
I was like, Richard III.
Not Richard III.
You guys were crazy. That's crazy, guys.
No, I think Richard II, though, I think that's one that's been cited as that. Again, history is my mulligan subject, so I'm not good at this aspect of it. But he's definitely, in the past, been known to paint England as this great thing, and other countries as not so great for political reasons. Because the monarchy was the one funding his plays, for sure.
School spirit.
All right.
School spirit.
Yeah, so that's just the thought that I had. So in Act 4, Scene 3, Ross comes in and he's like, hey, no, everything's fine. Like, everyone's alive. It's all good. And then about 2 paragraphs later, he's like, oh, yeah, but by the way, your wife and whole family's been murdered. So what's up with that?
This is a classic situation of why reading Shakespeare doesn't work. Ta-da! Because that scene is all about subtext. Because if you look at it, there's double meaning in everything he says. He says,
trying to like put it on softly, and then he's like, okay, I'm just gonna tell you, like, oh God.
There's no easy way to say this.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like if you wreck your parents' car. Your car is here.
Yeah.
Your car has tires. Your car still turns on. But it's dead.
Yeah. That's pretty much what he does. Macduff says, how does my wife? And we've just seen them murdered on stage.
Yeah.
Macduff says, how does my wife? And Ross says, why? Well. And Macduff says, and all my children? And Ross says, well, too. And, I mean, what he's saying is basically, like, they're in heaven. Like, they're doing well because they're in the eternal realm of goodness, but... they're dead. And he's speaking really short, and there's, like, periods. Like, he's not... And if you read it in meter, you can do, why, well, 8 blank spaces of empty space. Where that's just hanging.
Oh, snap!
So, you know, how does my children do... And all my children, space.
Yeah.
Well, too. Yeah. Space.
I think Macbeth's lines are also like that when, after they find out Duncan's dead, I think his lines are also like, you know, like choppy like that.
But is this play in meter?
Some of it is, yeah.
Some of
for sure.
Though some of the witches stuff is, yeah.
Things like the porter, lower class people, not so much.
Right.
Things like Lady Macbeth and Macbeth, yeah. Especially when they're on fire together, I think.
Yeah.
That's how you know it's getting sexy.
There's also a lot of sex and gender symbolism in the play. Who wants to talk about that?
Yeah, this play deals a lot with that. Lady M is a very masculine character. Like, her taking the lead on the whole, Elise plays Lady M on Real Housewives of Shakespeare.
Nice!
She's super manly.
I'm very manly.
And I think you guys do a really great job of showing that, like, she's clearly the brains behind the operation of the Macbeth household.
Yeah, absolutely.
Macbeth comes in and... He's very, like, noble still, and he's like, I'm not sure we should kill the king. I mean, it's great that I'm Thane of Cawdor. Let's just be Thane of Cawdor for a second. She's like, nope, we're going to be king and queen right now, and you're going to straight up murder this guy. And she convinces him, and part of the reason she's able to, in the way Shakespeare sets it up, is right before he comes in, when she's reading the letter and saying, like, this is great, we're going to be king and queen, she literally calls the spirits and says, unsex me here.
Yeah.
And make me a man. Take away my gentle natures that are supposed to be for women and make me a man. And later, when she does convince him, he says, have male sons only, saying, like, you are not meant to be womanly in any aspect. Even your children need to be men because you're so, like, bloodthirsty, basically. And even she calls him out. She's like, are you a man? Like, you said you were going to kill the king, and now you're not going to? Are you a man? And convinces him through that. She shames him for being womanish when she is so on fire. She's, like, ready to go. She's Hamlet Act 5. Straight up in Act 1.
Because I would say, just growing up doing theater, the Scottish play, there's just, like, a lot of things that you hear about it, even before you read it. You just, like, you kind of know the plot. When I was reading it, I was like, dang, she comes on stage and is right away, like, jumping into some of the most famous speeches.
Yeah.
She's like, hey, here I am. I'm ready to murder everyone. And also, I was a little bit surprised. I feel like she doesn't have that much stage time for being such a well-known character. She's really only in about 3 scenes, I want to say. 3 or 4?
Yeah, she's not maybe. In a lot.
Yeah. She's not in a lot. But I think that speaks to just, like, the powerful nature of her character, that she's not on stage that much, and it's everybody talks about it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, she's probably the most memorable character in the whole play,
I would say.
Thank
you. You're welcome.
And I think, like you said, she's not in very many scenes, but every single one of her scenes is iconic.
Yes. It's, yep.
Unsex me here, and then her next scene is, art thou a man?
Yep.
And then her next scene is, like, out damn spot.
And then that's, she's like, dead. And then she's dead.
Yeah.
She's, well, she does have the dinner scene.
Yeah, she's in a couple other scenes as, like, a supporting character, but those are, like, the scenes that she's the main part of, and all of those are incredibly iconic.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really interesting. It's called Macbeth, but she's definitely the driving force for the first half of the play.
Well, she's also Macbeth.
True. It's interesting, things don't really start going wrong until he stops planning with her, too. Because at a certain point, she's like, wait, what are you going to do? And he's like, I don't want to tell you, it's better if you just don't know at this point. And that's when he's plotting the death of, like, Macduff's wife and child. And I think it was Banquo as well. I think that's when he tells her that in particular.
That's interesting, too, because I feel like, you know, kind of in the ether of the theater world, is slightly this idea that, I mean, obviously you know that Lady M totally manipulates Macbeth into, like, killing the king. But then it's kind of like, but then he goes crazy, maybe, and is just like, hey, I feel like I should kill everyone now.
Yeah, he gets very paranoid. There's definitely a whole theme of, like, paranoia and what power does to a person's brain in this play.
One ring to rule them all. I might not have my Shakespeare nerd card yet, but I've got all the other ones in my wallet. I'm ready.
Macbeth equals Gollum. Love it.
Side note.
What up?
Do you know the story behind, like, the creation of the Ents is inspired by Macbeth?
What?
You don't know this? When J.R.R. Tolkien was younger and reading Macbeth in school or in life
Went to Oxford.
Yeah. And he was reading it and he was like, oh, the forest is going to move. This is going to be great. And then when it turns out to just be the army, like, pretending to be the trees, he was really disappointed. And so when he sits down to write Lord of the Rings, he was like, you know what I'm freaking including? All forest that's going to come and screw you over, Isengard.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm so glad you didn't know that.
My heart is singing right
and
now.
And I got to tell you that.
That's so funny.
And he's like, you know who I'm going to base the main tree on? My good friend C.S. Lewis. So I read this one play on my own, you guys. I wasn't able to make it to the reading, and I am really proud of myself. It seems like it's a very daunting play because it does have this kind of mysterious quality.
Yes. Okay.
And all this superstition around it. But you were right. First of all, there's no B plot in this play at all. It's a straight up like, I mean, it's not even a murder mystery. It's like a crime drama, basically. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's complicated is all of these different political allies and where everyone stands.
It's which army are you on?
Yeah.
That's the game.
When you play the Game of Thrones.
Mm. You either win or you die.
Hashtag so many good references.
Yeah, actually, Game of Thrones in particular in the past two seasons has been drawing a lot from Shakespeare. Just wanna throw that out
there. I know you guys are doing, you know, sort of parodies of Shakespeare. Are there themes from this play in particular that you drew on in that episode?
Yes, ma'am. It's like you were talking about the out damn spot thing when Lady Macbeth loses her damn mind and she has like the hypothetical blood in her hand that she can't get off.
Right.
So as when I was writing this episode for Real Housewives, she's obsessed with hand lotion. And she's constantly rubbing hand lotion on because her hands are so dry. and then also I made them have an all natural, all organic cleaning product company. But even like more subtle things of like you say, like Lady Macbeth is not totally in the play.
Right.
But in our episode, she's basically the whole episode. She's the one that does all the talking. Macbeth is the one, like he barely has any lines and he's always just agreeing with her.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh sure, honey, you know, it's
just kind of in the background. Nice.
Even when we murder Duncan Scotland, you see, like, she's knocking on the door and being like, hello! And he's kind of standing back, like, I don't want to do this. And she drags him in.
Nice.
A lot of, like, just subtle references to the play of, like, yeah, he didn't want to do this, but
it's happening.
Bitch wanted the empire.
Right.
Duncan Scotland is, like, the main investor of Madame Macbeth's all-natural, all-organic cleaning supplies.
Uh-huh.
And
amazing.
I mean, basically, like, the plot is, like, to kill him and then
Take over the company,
right. Which they do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out that they're planning a benefit in his honor.
Every year since he died, they plan the Duncan Scotland Die Too Soon, We Miss You Every Day Memorial Charity Event.
It's their way of honoring him. So yeah, so that actually is what will happen in the final episode takes place at the benefit.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
So beyond the Real Housewives of Shakespeare, what are some other modern day adaptations of the Scottish play? I know we were just discussing a modern day film version that uses all the original text with Michael Fassbender and Marion Cotillard that came out in the fall, I believe.
Yeah, pretty.
Which I've heard has great cinematography. But,
it's very pretty.
It's very pretty. But might not focus so much in on the characters.
I did want to talk about the witches because I feel like they're one of the most famous parts of the show and we didn't even talk about them because... Again, when you just hear about Macbeth, you just hear like, oh yeah, and the three witches. Hello, first of all, this Hecate chick shows up. Take it away, guys.
This is one of the plays that uses supernatural stuff. It's like this one, Tempest and something else. I feel like there's one
Tempest
other.
Tempest definitely.
Tempest does.
Midsummer,
yeah. Yes. I think that's kind of it.
I mean, there's a ghost in Hamlet. Is that
ghosts
not supernatural?
Ghosts
are different.
I mean, because it's more... That's more in the realm of, like, Christianity supernatural.
Got it.
This is more in the realm of, like
magic, of Tolkien, of C.S. Lewis, and all the others.
There we go.
The other nerd cards, so to speak.
Excellente.
Yeah, so he brings in these witches, and it's actually the first thing you see in the play. And they're just doing magic on stage. And it's really cool. I'm about to get all emotional. This is the play I saw at the Globe Theatre in London.
Nice.
It was the only play I saw at the Globe. And
I could not have
been more excited. Yes. I was crying when I walked in. I was just standing in line so I could be up front for the Groundlings area. So I was literally like hands on the stage, like watching Macbeth. And also Pippin from Lord of the Rings played Banquo. So
what?
I was like, what? My hands are very small right now. I was this close to his calf. His sword almost stabbed me in the face. And I shook hands with Macbeth during the play at one point. Because I laughed. Can I tell this story?
Yes. So I wanted you to tell the story.
So when I saw this play, I love Shakespeare so much, clearly. And I got things that not everyone in that theater got. Actually, at intermission, this dad was like, does anybody know what's going on? And I just explained the entire first half of the play.
Yes!
Good for you.
They did the favorite staging I've ever seen of when Banquo gets murdered. So they kill Banquo, and Flounce runs up out through the audience.
Yes.
And Banquo's dead body is on stage, who's Pippin from Lord of the Rings also. So, like, Pippin is dead on stage.
No, Pippin.
I know. Billy Boyd is his real name.
he's also an actual human being and not a hobbit.
What?
So he gets murdered, and his dead body's on stage, and the murderer rolls him upstage, so towards the back of the auditorium, and, like, a trap door opens. So he's gonna roll him into this, like, pit, basically.
Wow.
And he's rolling him, and right then you hear, like, footsteps, and it's Macbeth in full royal garb, like a huge fur cape, and the murderer's rolling him, and Macbeth jumps over the murderer and Banquo in this hole, and, like, right as Banquo falls into this, like, grave, and Macbeth is like, aha, now I am king and no one can stop me, and he finally feels, like, confident for the first time, because he thinks, like, he's taking care of anybody who's gonna kill him, and he's just like, ha ha, and literally the entire theater is silent, because they just watched this murderer try and kill them, and I, being me, crack up. Because I'm like, that's so smart. I know exactly why you're doing what you're doing. And he looks me in the eye and is like, thank you. And I'm like freaking out. And I'm right there at the stage.
Yeah.
And I put my hand out for him to shake. And I'm like, ah. And he looks down at me and he goes to shake my hand and pulls it back like, gotcha. And I'm like, oh my God. Shakes my hand and, like, goes off and does the rest of the play. I was like, you're on fire, dude.
Damn.
Who was playing Macbeth? Just an actor?
It's just an actor, yeah. I don't
just
know his name.
An actor.
Yeah, it wasn't Frodo, so I don't know.
Quick addendum, that actor's name was Joseph Milson. He was great.
He did a really good job. But I was really excited, too, because the guy who played Malcolm, which is a tiny role, I'd seen do, like, 6 other plays recording versions of, like,
Sweet.
So I met him in the gift store while everyone was, like, freaking out over Pippin in the alleyway. I met him in the gift store. He was walking. No one was talking to him. And I was like, I'm so excited to meet you.
Aww.
He was very alarmed. He was, like, touched, but also, like, wow, she's so excited.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Right? So funny.
Okay, so my point is, when I saw this at the Globe, you're just sitting there waiting for the play to start, and then these girls start coming out and start talking about magic and, like, sort of summoning this, like, evil force. And it's a really powerful way to start this play and set the tone for the whole play.
Mm.
And that the first thing you see is these ladies being like, we're about to do some evil. Ready? Here's the play.
Nice.
That's, like, the start.
And you said you had done something with the Weird Sisters?
Yeah, that's episode 5 of Real Housewives of Shakespeare, because Lady Macbeth doesn't do anything without consulting her psychics.
Oh.
See what we did there?
I'm with you.
The Weird Sisters in art. Player, 3, I guess, you know, those, like, LA shops you see with, like, psychic, like, come in, like, tarot, ooh, $5.
Yeah.
They're they're basically that. And they get their, like, quote unquote special powers by smoking some ganja and, like, passing the bong around. And that's what, you know, they all kind of, like, get all, like, happy feeling. And then they say their response and what they see in the future.
Yeah,
excellent. So very similar to, like, the cauldron blowing. The smoke from the bowl is blowing the air.
The American Shakespeare
Center?
Yeah, they came to my school, to my college,
nice.
And did some workshops with us, and they were talking about the meter in one of Macbeth's speech when he says tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and the way that the meter falls, and it's just tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So Mar is the stress.
Is the thing that jumps out.
Interesting.
So,
mm-hmm. Nice. Yup. Sometimes I know things.
Oh, talking about modern adaptations?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another good one is, I think, House of Cards.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Especially, like, now that we've done, like, the last season. I don't know if you've seen the last season.
I haven't watched any of it, but my
I haven't
been
watched
it, and I've been
it
seeing it.
It focuses more on Claire, and I think that just, like, I don't know. Yeah, stresses it even more. I don't want to give away, like, the
what
season,
too much.
But I saw the first episode of House of Cards, and, like, as soon as it ended, I was like, this is, like, if Richard III married Lady Macbeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like, though, the trope of a manipulative wife is something that you do see in a lot of stuff.
Yes, yeah. And the witches stuff.
You're right. You do see, and I mean, double, toil and trouble is quoted in everything.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure in Hocus Pocus they use that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, you know, you straight up got three witches there. And in Harry Potter, mm-hmm. I think it's the third movie, they open with this chorus of frogs, mm-hmm. which is the song that's direct quotes. And I can't believe I didn't bring this up sooner. This play is actually referenced in the 16 nominated Tony Award musical Hamilton.
Hamilton.
Oh.
Also mistakenly called Hamlet by this woman. There's the top tweet on Lin-Manuel Miranda's Twitter feed is this woman. He's like, this woman leaned out her car window today and said, "Congratulations on Hamlet!" So he references, the line is, I trust you understand the reference to another Scottish tragedy without my having to name the play.
Ooh.
He says that so he doesn't say the name of the play in the theater. But then he says the name Macbeth later, but he doesn't exactly say it as the play name. So I think that's how he's getting around the superstition.
Cool.
He says, think me Macbeth, and then he names everyone else.
Or maybe they all, like, run around the theater after.
Yeah. Technical aspect this week, I'm actually going to cover because I wrote a research paper in college on Sarah Siddons, who was an actress in London in the late 1700s and pretty much revolutionized acting through her portrayal of a lot of characters, but she is very closely tied with her portrayal of Lady Macbeth. And Chris Woodworth, if you're listening to this podcast, I wrote this entire research paper and never read the play Macbeth, but I still got an A on my paper, and I still actually presented this paper at a theater conference in Chicago, so confession time.
Results may vary.
So basically, Sarah Siddons, who, that's her married name, was not really an actress when she was younger. She started acting later when she was in school. Then she got some theater patrons. She went to London at one point and performed as Portia in The Merchant of Venice and got really horrible reviews. Oh, and they kind of sent her back to the countryside and were like, why don't you not be in London right now? So then she worked with the Bath Company, which performed in Bath and Bristol. And there she really got really good. And so then they brought her back to London. She comes back to London for the second time and begins to perform there. And she has this very natural style of acting, and natural meaning she's always in the scene. A lot of actors at that time were just kind of like, let me say my line. Now I'll stand here and wait. Now I'll say my line. And she, whenever she was on stage, she was always engaged in what was going on and was always reacting, even when she wasn't speaking. The biggest thing that she did that was different, because at this time a lot of roles are also very codified, almost sort of similar to the way that you would see traveling musicals now, like it's going to be sort of the same choreography if you see it in Indianapolis and if you see it in Boston, if you see it here. So roles are very, very codified. So if you come in to play Juliet, you're going to do this blocking, it's going to be this way. And she wanted to, in the sleepwalking scene, put the candle down when she walks on stage and then rub her hands as though she was actually trying to wash her hands and get blood off of them. And the director was like, please don't do that. No one's done that. Just hold the candle on stage and say your lines. And she said, no. So she goes out on stage for this performance, puts the candle down, and then starts rubbing her hands, you know, out damn spot. And the whole audience loses it. They're like, oh my God, everything's realistic. And the director, after this performance, came down. And Siddons is quoted as saying that Mr. Sheridan most ingeniously congratulated me on my obstinacy. End quote. She was so famous in London, it was basically impossible to get tickets to any of her performances for anything at the Covent Garden Theater.
Mm. Like Hamilton. Got it.
Yeah. Especially if she was playing Lady Macbeth.
Right.
The audience was so enraptured with her performance because it is so naturalistic, which they're not used to seeing someone you know, just listening to another person and acting and reacting through that. There's reports of people fainting in the audience watching her perform. There's reports of men crying during her tragic performances because she's just so intense and so into it. And there's a story that I read when I started researching my research paper, and I haven't been able to find it again. So it's apocryphal, but...
What?
Meaning it is not completely fact-checked.
Got it.
That her last performance as Lady M, and she was like, I'm going to retire after this. The audience was cheering so much. She came back on stage and basically improvised a monologue as Lady M for the audience because they just would not stop clapping. So Sarah Siddons and her portrayal of Lady Macbeth do essentially give birth to what we know as modern day natural acting.
In conclusion, bitches get stuff done.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. In conclusion. Wow. For sure.
Cool.
Yeah, so she's a pretty cool chick, that Sarah Siddons. So we're going to have our guests read today.
So this scene is Act 1, Scene 7. And this is when they're having dinner with Duncan, the king who's still alive, at their house. Macbeth has left the room, and basically Lady Macbeth is like, why are you leaving? They're going to think something's up. And he's like, well, something is up. And they talk about whether they're really going to murder Duncan or not. And this is a great scene that shows Lady M really pushing him.
Cool. Take it away, guys.
He has almost supped. Why have you left the chamber?
Hath he asked for me?
No, you not he has.
We will proceed no further in this business. He hath honored me of late, and I have bought golden opinions from all sorts of people, which would be worn now into their newest gloss, not cast aside so soon.
Was the hope drunk wherein you dressed yourself? Hath it slept since, and wakes it now to look so green and pale as what it did so freely? From this time such I account thy love. Art thou a fear to be in thy same, in thine own act and valor, as thou art in desire? Wouldst thou have which thou esteem the ornaments of life, and live a coward in thy own esteem? Letting I dare not wait upon, I would, like the poor cat in the cage.
Prithee, peace. I dare do all that may become a man who dares do more is none.
What beast was it, then, that made you break into this enterprise to me? When you durst do it, then you were a man, and to be more than that what you were, you would be so much more the man. Nor time nor place did then adhere, and yet you would make both. They have made themselves, and that their fitness now does unmake you. I have given suck, and I know how tender 'tis to love the babe that milks me. I would, while it was smiling in my face, have plucked my nipple from his boneless gums and dashed the brains out, had I so sworn as you have done to this.
If we should fail.
We fail, but screw your courage to the sticking place and we'll not fail. When Duncan is asleep, to the rather shall his day's hard journey soundly invite him. His two chamberlains will I with wine and wassail so convince that memory, the warder of the brain, shall be a fume, and the receipt of reason a limbic only. When in swinish sleep their drenched natures lies as in death, what cannot you and I perform upon the unguarded Duncan? What not put upon his spongy officers, who shall bear the guilt of our great well.
Bring forth men, children, only. For thy undaunted metal should compose nothing but males. Will it not be received when we have marked with blood those sleepy two of his own chamber and use their very daggers that they have dunt?
Who dares receive it other, as we shall make our griefs and clamor roar upon his death?
I am settled, and bend up each corporal agent to this terrible feat. Away, and mock the time with fairest show. False face must hide what the false heart doth know.
Let's do it! Let's do
it! Beautiful!
Lovely!
So where can they find Real Housewives of Shakespeare?
Oh, on our Facebook page.
Yeah, Facebook/Real Housewives of Shakespeare. And also on YouTube, you can find us if you just also Google Real Housewives of Shakespeare with the first video.
Cool.
Fabulous. Yeah. Thanks for coming, you
Thanks
guys.
For having us. Awesome.
That fun. Yeah. Thanks for joining us. This is Allison.
And Beverly.
Deuces, Bezos!
What?
Yes. I'm obsessed with Twelfth Night right now.
Oh, you'll love it. It takes place after Twelfth Night.
Yeah.
It's Olivia dealing with the aftermath of why am I married to the twin that I didn't fall in love with? I mean, like, after reading that play, you're like, wait, okay, you just
married a stranger.
You married someone you don't even know and you're okay with it. Everyone's like, this is great. And play's over.
Right.
It's like, what? You look like the person I fell in love with. Same shit.